I want to give a special thanks to our guests, William Ofebu and Brad Gareth, who are the voice actors for Twisted Kaiyun and Asamon
You can get him on that one, Bradley.
Yamada. It's close enough. It's close enough.
That one would have been like cut. Let's look at the notes. No, but thank you so much. I'm William Ofebu. Sometimes I look at my microphone when I'm talking, and I voice Twisted Kaiyun, in Hell's Paradise. He's known as, at least in the English version, Warped Kaiyun in the Hell's Paradise, or yeah, Hell's Paradise English manga.
Yep, I'm Bradley Gareth. I play Kisho Yamada Asaimon in the dub of Hell's Paradise. I think there's probably a number of ways to write out that name with the Japanese way of saying it, but it's fine. It's fine. It's totally fine.
Asaimon,
Asaimon.
Asaimon,
Asaman. Yeah, I play Kisho Yamada Asaimon. Yeah, it's all good.
That was an awesome thing. Oh man, you know what? I should have brought the print. I should have brought
Start advertising the prints on the podcast.
the
And here we have these fabulous products that you can buy with all this number here.
This is Twisted
Oh.
Kaiyun, and this is Ass Man.
Ass man. We're all ass men here.
I will say,
Off to a great start.
if I hadn't heard it before, I probably would have been like, that's I would have not been able to say it. So,
It's all good.
and then what's up, everybody? I'm Bryce from the Anime Show, where you can find all your anime news and memes. And this is going to be this week's episode, consisting of the two brilliant voice actors from Hell's Paradise. And let's get into it. Where do you want to start, Matt?
So, I really want to know, did you guys know about Hell's Paradise prior to getting your roles?
Yes.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I'm just gonna take the credit, Bradley. I got
Sure, thank you.
Bradley into the manga. I
Yeah,
was like hooked. I think I even brought it up the last time we spoke, actually.
Yes,
that's awesome. Yep.
Yeah, I love Hell's Paradise. It's my top favorite manga series. I was reading it like the first volume, got hooked, and from then on, it was just like I bought as much as I could. And then, like every couple months or every 3 months, whatever it was, when the new one would come out, I'd get it immediately. And it just the art, the pacing, the way it had me on the edge of my seat all the time was just dope. And I think it did the same for everyone that I introduced it to as well.
Yes. Whenever William lent it to me, I was like, oh yeah, I'll pick it up, I'll check it out. And then I read it, and then my fiance read it, and then like we would like I would read it in like a day or two, and then Jess would read it in like a couple hours, and she'd be like, you got to get more of that manga from she just bought a Sagiri figure and a print from Marissa Duran, the actor for Sagiri from at Anime Frontier. So
That's
quite
awesome.
liked it.
Well, knowing that William, you got Bradley into it. Did you guys get each other into voicing in the anime?
I'll let you go first, Bradley.
No. So the thing is, William and I started hanging out about a year or so ago. I've wanted to do voice in anime since about 2011. I figured out what voicing anything was, like, because I didn't really know. I didn't really think about it. You know, you're a kid, you watch cartoons, you don't really think about like people being behind the characters. And I saw, you know, because I had the Dragon Ball Z VHS tapes, I'd see like, you know, Sean Schemmel and Chris Sabat just sort of like sprinkled in there, being like, oh, you know, the show's so cool. And I just assumed they were celebrities, right? Like they were the same as like Tom Cruise or whatever to me. So I was like, oh yeah, I mean, so I guess that's true. And then like I only found out whenever I was like 16 or so by like watching, I think it was like Shin Chan. Commentaries on the Shin Chan DVDs for the English dub that Funimation did, like, oh wow, these are just like people that just showed up. And then I started watching like you know all these videos online of like voice actor like interviews, and I was like, huh, what if I built my whole life around this? So I decided at age 16, I'm gonna do this thing for the rest of my life. Let's see how that goes. So I knew I had to move down to Dallas, worked to go to college, save money, move down here eventually after a bunch of time doing that and paying down debt. And then from there, like I had done a ton of indie work up to that point as well, and like indie games, indie animations, whatever I could get my hands on. And then through a series of connections and like chance auditions and things like that, I got into anime.
And that's the rest awesome. Is history.
Yeah, yeah. The last 2 years is history.
Nice, man. I'm very grateful for all my friends who are making it up here, and I'm really looking forward to the future for us as well. Let's see. So for me, back when I was a wee boy, I was running home to catch Dragon Ball Z and fell in love with it, and those shows were what got me interested in acting. Much like he's just said, like I wasn't necessarily thinking that there was some person nearby that was creating this stuff. I thought it was in this faraway land called Hollywood that I would never reach. But I was like, you know, I can act. So I'm just going to do it. And there I went. Fast forward to when I was like 20 something. Yes, I'm not 20 something now. I'm a little bit older than that. Fast forward to when I was 20 something, I was collecting Dragon Ball Z DVDs and I just randomly decided to watch the credits again. And I realized, oh, Funimation is in like Dallas, Texas. They made Dragon Ball Z in Dallas. Oh my God, that's nearby. Blah, blah, blah. And it rekindled my interest in voice acting. Took classes, eventually ended up moving here to Dallas, Texas. And thanks to, I guess, my experience and networking, friends, et cetera, managed to get my foot through the door and stay inside. I'm very perplexed and humbled.
Always good to stay inside the industry once you get
it. Yeah, yep. Let's see.
That's kind of awesome that it's just kind of chance that you guys ended up where you're at, because that just kind of means everybody can, there's no limits to anybody. So that's really awesome to hear.
Yeah, I think it's, I think, you know, there are people, if you go about this job in a smart way and you are decent with finance, which also helps, you don't. I remember when I was 16, like whenever I looked this up, I'd hear stories of people that would move to Dallas, like in their car, no job, no money, and just be like, I'm just going to voice an anime. It'll be fine. I'll live in my car until I become like a superstar. As long as you don't do that, if you approach this with a little bit more tact, I think anybody could, with enough time and diligence, make this work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same goes for any kind of, or almost any kind of entertainment profession.
Yeah, be, exactly.
Yeah.
Very diligent.
For sure. We totally get that from our side of everything. I guess kind of jumping into it, what was everybody's favorite part about the first episode?
Oh,
specifically.
I mean, me personally, I don't know. It might be a little twisted, but I like the torture they did to him at first, trying to kill him.
Yeah. So the torture that they did, like, it was interesting how tactful they were about the gruesome crap they were putting people through, including Gabimaru mm-hmm. the Hollow. Yep. So in the manga, like it doesn't hold back any punches. It's like, yeah, here are the guts. This is the colon. This is the blood. And in the anime, it's like, you know, it's happening. And it gives you that like split second of like relief where it will give you like a red and black
mm-hmm.
frame. But you still know what's going on. It's not like it's pulling away from it. So I thought that they did that very, very well, rather than trying to restructure what had happened in the story or something. I can't remember if it was the first or second episode, but I thought it was interesting that they kind of established Sagiri's doubt really early. Sagiri? Yeah, Sagiri. Anyway, with okay. a filler. There's like a filler scene where there's like some random man just like trying to impart a little bit of wisdom to her, or like give her some advice or something, and she, you know, has that quick interaction and that's it. I remember when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's not actually in the source material. That's interesting how they did that to help push that character forward without using too much time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before I like start just going on and on, I will give someone else a chance to talk as well.
Yeah, I think Sagiri is a character that you, I mean, so, whereas Gabimaru is kind of the main character, Sagiri is by and large like the perspective character of Hell's Paradise, where like a lot of the explanations of the world are given to her because it's a different world that she's like getting used to. Even stuff about the Yamada Asaemon, she gets like my character gives her like a whole lecture on like what, how they really interact. And I think that establishing that early on and establishing that relationship with Gabimaru is, I think, really interesting in the first episode. I really quite like that that aspect of it. I think that's really good.
I love the perspective that you guys have, because for me, like, what really drew me in, because I watched the anime first, was Gabimaru's abilities in the first episode. I was like, okay, yep, gotta keep watching this. This is unique and it is amazing. So it's kind of crazy how because you guys live this world, that it's like, well, I love the intricacies of all the characters, and I'm just like visual things.
That's fair. I am very anime poisoned, so like what's the thing here?
Yeah. And I mean, God, I feel like when we first discussed covering it, when we did our short flights over it, it was like, Matt was like, you guys got to watch this video. Like, the trailer for this looks great. And honestly, the trailer is what drug me into watching it. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean,
post the first season.
As soon as you get to see that, like, MAPPA is behind it, you know it's going to be a banger.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to have some great visuals. I like that the island, I guess, to jump ahead a little bit whenever they actually get to the island. I do appreciate the sort of, because the manga also goes into it a little bit, but I do think it probably works even more effectively in color. The sort of technicolor, like, surrealness of the island, I think is really, really good. If you're familiar with Paprika, the Satoshi Kon film, It gives it that dreamlike quality that film has, that it, like, it's all the colors are really saturated, and like there's you know, it's in the trailer too, like, where Sagi's like, what is this place? Like, it's the mystery of the island and how it's so foreign and alien, and it's almost like a different planet. I love that. It's really I think it does really good with that,
dude. Like, when you first see it, whether it's like manga or anime, you get this, like, it's like an explosion. You're just like, oh my God, like, this does look heavenly. This looks like a paradise. And then like, all these little things happen. I love how Gabimaru got that moment where he was like, no, this is freaking creepy, man. Cause that doesn't belong here. That, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just like you said, it's very alien. Like, he sees something and goes, like, the details of this say trouble. Whereas all the other folks who just went in with, you know, their naked eyes, and they were like, oh man, this is pretty. I like this. They had no idea. I thought it was very wild to go from seeing it in black and white and seeing all the detail that the creator put into it to having this MAPPA explosion in front of us of vivid colors and stuff.
For sure. Absolutely. it was a very well animated anime, for sure. And God, like, I don't know, I'm sorry. It's one of those things where, like,
Excuse me, sir.
You're fine. It's one of those things that really just kind of blew my mind when I first saw it. And unfortunately, I haven't had the perspective of seeing it like you guys, seeing the manga and then seeing it in the anime as well. So for me, the perspective is like, wow, this is just, everything is so nicely done compared to, you know, some of the things that we have seen lately.
Yeah, there's a dedication to style that I think is there. Lot of things will not, like, dedicate themselves really to style. And I mean, I've seen anime that are I've seen anime that are not very good, that do manage to subsist almost entirely on style. And I do like that Hell's Paradise manages to have some of both. It has a decent amount of substance, and it's also very stylistic. So I really appreciate that about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That intro to it was like, it held back nothing. It was just so awesome. That was one of those intros where I was like, am I ever going to really skip this one? I'm going to watch it every time, aren't I?
It's an interesting choice. I really would have thought, reading the manga, they would have gone with a more traditional Japanese song, but it works. I do think it works. It lends itself, I think, as well to that action movie air that I was telling you guys about before we started recording. I do think Hell's Paradise feels a lot like, you know, it's sort of what's the name of that movie? The It's the Japanese one. It's the thing that like the Hunger Games are based off of. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's the famous death game one.
It's like Battle Royale or
Battle
something.
Royale, that's it. Yeah. Battle Royale, that's okay. The name of it. Yeah, it's very Battle Royale. It feels, you know, just sort of switchbacked in time.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of like, makes complete sense.
Yeah. And then behind the story, like, what do you guys think of the reasoning that they're going to that island to get the elixir? Like, the whole, like, thought process behind, oh, let's take all the criminals. I mean, it seems like a couple other stories. What was that one movie that came out with where they took all these people out of prison? It was like, you got to survive this game. Like, to me, that's that aesthetic, and I really like that, and it made it really, really interesting.
Yeah. I forget the exact movie where they take the prisoners out for that, but I know what you're talking about.
There's definitely more than one.
Definitely more than one. Yeah. That's the other thing. Yeah.
My early 2000s brain remembered the Stone Cold movie Condemned, but yes, there's another one. Was it that one?
Yeah, I'm thinking of that one.
Ah, nice. Yeah, that was a product of its time.
story about the guy or about the emperor, the governing body, in this case the shogun, trying to get like the elixir of eternal life. I mean, that's even in like Princess Mononoke, that's like the primary thing that like is happening in the background of that. So yeah, it's combining a lot of these things, which I mean, it's interesting the way that Hell's Paradise plays with like its environments too, because if we're using that as a point of comparison, there's a lot of the like natural beauty of the island, but also knowing that it's fabricated with like what you get on like the Tenzin and what they reveal about it. It's really fascinating. It says a lot of really fascinating things. It's sort of like you know, the Isle of Dr. Moreau, the story of like the doctor that's like fusing all the animals and people together and that sort of thing. It's a little bit of that as well, I think.
Mm. Oh yeah. Mm. It just seems like there's a lot of different things that came together to make this masterpiece. I mean,
yes,
I feel like we could go on and on about it. And I particularly like further on when they start actually getting into it and past like the first like little butterfly insects that would bite them and turn them a little bit into
flowers.
Yeah.
But like past that, like where they start bringing up like the religious stuff, they get like the Buddhists and all the different other kinds of monuments in there. Like that made it interesting too. Like my first perspective was, are we talking like this is a bunch of like failed religions that are leading to this, or what's this about?
Yeah, there's some really interesting things with that. I feel like we can only speculate on what they may have meant with a lot of that. But yeah, it's a really interesting aesthetic choice, especially.
Mm-hmm.
I like how they bring stuff like that in, like a real culture, a real belief. I believe I'm pretty sure they already covered this, but because what's his name, Senta, like was pointing out all these different things.
Yes.
So Taoism, Buddhism, I think there's something else, and they also incorporate the different countries, so China and Japan, and I think they refer to China as a different term that's escaping me right now, but
yeah, they use an older term for it.
I always enjoy stuff like that. Just I'm gonna tangent for a second and then come right back. Sure. In I was telling someone recently that, well, I asked someone, hey, have you seen that movie that's on your shirt? And because it was an Exorcist shirt, like the first movie, and they're like, no. I was like, oh man, I really love that, you should check it out. I always thought those movies were like the scariest because they have a further sense of realism to them. Like if you believe in Christianity, then you believe in God, and then you probably believe in hell and heaven and all this stuff. And then you probably also believe that angels and demons exist. And if that is the case, then an exorcism is something that could happen and probably seemingly historically has, because of some sort of infiltration, infestation, and possession. So when Hell's Paradise was incorporating things like that into the story, I just thought, oh, okay, like somewhere there's probably someone who believes in like Buddhism or whatever. And that kind of spirituality makes the story hit that much closer to home. I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah. I mean, also like in Japan, a lot of their media, if it does focus on like religions, primarily you get Shintoism, where like, you know, you'll see like Amaterasu or Susanoo or Tsukuyomi or Bishamon Ten and the other seven lucky gods, like in Noragami or something like that. Primarily that's what you get. Or they'll just like focus on like, you know, Greek, you know, the other big ones in the world, like Greek gods, Egyptian gods, Norse gods. Norse gods especially are really, really popular in anime. It's really neat because you don't see a lot of Chinese Japanese mythology, which is like the big basis for Hell's Paradise. And, you know, they get into more why later in the manga, why it's Chinese specifically. But it's an interesting sort of exploration of it you don't often see. I think the only other big anime, and it has a very questionable interpretation of it, given the time period it's from, that really goes into anything resembling Chinese mythology is really like Ron the One Half. That's like for a movie. And it's primarily his jokes. So it's really neat. It's really neat getting to see that. I feel like that also adds, like, it's a whole different flavor of something. It feels very different from the other stuff that really has it right now in anime.
Absolutely. Yeah, very nice point. I wanted to get this out there, too. The leader, the shogun? Is it the shogun?
Who's the shogun. Monarch?
Yeah.
Yes.
I always love how the shogun in one piece of media or another is either like this very holier than thou wise person or framed in a different light. Like maybe there's some ignorance involved there, or he's more contempt or greedy, etc. And in this case, the shogun seems like very disconnected. He's just kind of like, I don't really care. Like, you guys are going to go do this. I'll be invincible.
I'll be chilling
forever. And if I'm not happy, you not happy. In fact, you are not anything anymore.
Yeah, this is a side assignment for the shogun. This is like, send some guys to go see if they can make me immortal. Sure.
He's like, I deserve the universe.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really neat aspect of it too. And I mean, like, you look, Japan has a really interesting relationship with the shogun and the whole like period. I mean, Japan has an interesting relationship with everything pre-World War II. That's the easiest way to put it. And the depiction of it is always extremely interesting. I mean, like, it's interesting seeing that, like, you know, by and large, the shoguns represent, you know, any kind of aristocracy, any kind of, like, leadership right now. It's just some rich jerk that owns everything and gets to tell you what to do. Why not portray that as a jerk? And I mean, if you haven't read it's a really interesting book. I think I come at it with a very odd angle. If you've ever read Shusaki Endo's book Silence, there's also a movie. I think there's a movie adaptation by Martin Scorsese that you can also watch. It's about the shogunate. So if you're unfamiliar with I hope you guys don't mind me going on a tangent on history.
No, you're fine.
And if you, when you look at approximately how the shogunate was formed in the early like 1600s, because before that it was the Warring States period when like Oda Nobunaga was like conquering everything, and then it got passed on to Hideyoshi, who sort of finished stuff after Nobunaga died, and then Hideyoshi died, and stuff was supposed to pass on to his son, and the first Tokugawa, the Tokugawa shogunate, whenever it started, one of the things it did was, and this is for a lot of reasons, one of them was, like, Nobunaga, whenever he was conquering the warring, like, the multiple states that had been broken up by Japan for a long time, he allied with foreigners, and specifically he like got guns a lot from like Europe and like bombs from Europe, so they were like, well, we can't have all these Christians and Europeans coming into the country, and that's why it's closed for like 200 something odd years until, like, you know, the Americans and the British show up trying to open it in the 1860s. Consequently, the book Silence is all about like a Christian priest, like a Catholic priest specifically, going and trying to do like a mission to Japan. Well, basically the book is an exploration of like whether or not it's possible to be a good person or a good Christian in an unjust system. Because the book also goes into like him getting like tortured and like him trying to help the local people but getting betrayed, and like it's a lot of this exploration of what that means to exist under the shogunate. And I think that a lot of what a shogunate represents is sort of peace from war at the sake of like you're sacrificing a lot of like fairness and autonomy and the sense of like being able to do and live basically as you want, because you now live under this big broad system. And I mean, like, a lot of the character arcs in Hell's Paradise do also explore that idea where, like, people just sort of have these lives that are largely tragic. And, like, when you look at the Yamada Asaemons, if they have problems, like, Senta is a great example of a character that's like, I live by these rules and they suck and I hate them. I never wanted to be an executioner. I just want to draw. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of the killers are also like that. Gabimaru, you know, wants to just live with his wife, but, you know, the ninja villages operate as like assassins for the shogunate. It's an interesting thematic angle to come at this from, to talk about how these systems are like really oppressive and ruining the lives of the people in the show. And you know, other people feel much more bothered by it. I mean, like, there's a just to go into what my character actually says, Keisha's like, you know, the shogunate wants the elixir. That's what's important. Everything else comes second. And then, you know, he says rules are illusions. If people don't believe them, then they don't mean anything. Laws only exist if you choose to follow them and if everyone around you chooses to follow them. Otherwise, they don't matter at all. And I think that that's all really interesting explorations that the manga does for what that means and how it is to exist under that. So that I think is a big appeal to me of Hell's Paradise. I think I talked for like 5 minutes straight. I'm so sorry.
Fine. Like, you brought up some like really interesting points and facts that are part of the show, and is interesting to learn a little bit more.
Hell yeah. So, yeah.
How does it feel saying all those lines while holding the character that William is portraying in your hand, holding his head in your hand?
It's very, very funny. Again, Keisha, well, I'll tell you a little bit about the process of going in, what anime dubbing is like now, because the thing is that for certain shows get auditions, right? Like, if you're familiar with an audition process where, like, you know, you read for the character, the director chooses out, like, oh yeah, let's bring in this guy for this guy, let's bring in this guy for this guy. Hell's Paradise is not one of those shows because of the simul dubbing process. You don't have time to audition everyone. So what that means is that Mike McFarland, who's the director of the show, just sort of called us both in and was just like, hey, you're going to play this guy. Like, I didn't audition for it. I didn't read for it. I didn't do anything. It was just like, you're this guy now. And it's like, oh, okay. All right. And then you go in and the expectation, you know, is to sort of dive into these shoes immediately. And for Keisho's very fun. William could speak to the experience of playing Twisted Chaos after this, but for Keisho, he wants to get in and leave. The character is all about just, I am here to do this job that I absolutely am being forced to do, and then I am going to exit the story. So it's very interesting being this guy. It's like, all right, you know, I'm here to just do this job and then bail. By the way, while I'm here, let me tell you about how absolutely messed up all of this is going to be. Anyway, bye.
So and he nearly got away with it too.
Yeah, I get to be very, very bitchy. I get to be very, very sly, very, very snide, very tired of everyone. I'm the guy at the office that just wants to go home and drink a glass of wine while sitting with his cat. And I think that's beautiful. But it did create an atmosphere where I'm like, his attitude towards killing Kaon is like, I mean, I don't like doing it, but it's my job. Like, he's clocking in, right? Like, this is like, I guess I gotta kill this guy. All right, yeah. I guess I get to go home now.
I always, like, whenever I watched the scene, I was like, this guy is so hoity-toity. Like, he thinks he's so much better than everyone around him. And he's not even, like, above putting other people down. I'm just like, who are you, and yeah, why are you doing this?
He does, like, office gossip. Like, he's, like, talking about all the other Yamada Asai moments. Yeah. Like, yeah, they're all looking to go up the ladder. I'm not. I don't care. I just want to go.
He's literally like one of the mean girls. He's just
He is the mean girl of the executioners. I love that for him. It's a shame he dies so horribly.
Well, he had a smile on. He was
that's true. You get high as balls whenever you die in this show. Which is, you know,
they make up for it at least.
Yeah, you know, it works. It's nice. You know, it's a morphine as you're going down.
Yeah. It's so like
speak to Kaon.
It's a blissful thing. I know Senta knows about that. Let's see. So of course when I got the notification about that, I was very giddy. I was so happy. And discovering later on that, you know, one of my closest friends here, like, gets to be right in the same scenes and same episode, we're working together yet again, actually. I was extremely happy going into it. I remember walking in and Mike was happy to see me, and once we started he's like, well, I needed someone who could do a very deep, gruff, low voice. And I was like, oh, okay, this is my bread and butter. That's it. And Twisted Kaon is, he does not get into a whole lot of detail like Keisho does. He's more like, he's kind of like a Nappa, and he's there to, like, basically buff up the hero. Like, he's supposed to be the tank. He's supposed to be the be-all, end-all. He knows it. On a scale of reality to unrivaled imagination. He's right there at the bottom. He's just stuck in reality, whereas Gabimaru has room to grow. He's just a stepping stone. Yeah. But you got to make that stepping stone as big as freaking possible. So this guy, as experienced as he is, there's no way that he could possibly lose to, you know, a little twig, a little ninja, a little samurai, a flower place. Like, there's no way that his flawless plan of, oh, I'll just get everybody else and then I'll go get the stuff, that'll make it easy. He's very much like, it's black and white. It's about to be a flat, just a straight board game. You roll the dice, you get hopefully six, and you move forward as fast as possible. That's Twisted Kayun. And he's just not worried about anything. And he lets other people know, like, hey, like, sorry, buddy, but you're finished. This is the end of the board game because I'm the boss. Little did he know he was, you know, like one of the little shadow creatures that Sora destroys in Kingdom Hearts. He's like nothing. But
I mean, he's as strong as a dude can be without the actual magic that the rest of the show operates on. Right.
Right.
That's the truth.
And that's an interesting thing about him, because even if he had the opportunity to discover those things, he's so one-sided, even more so than what's his name with one hand, Gantetsusai.
Yeah, Gantetsusai. That's right.
Yeah, like he has like no opportunity to even expand because he's so closed-minded. He's just gonna be like, "This is it," and y'all just shut up and move. And being able to play a character like that is really fun for me, no matter what, because he just gets to be intense. I love intense characters like that, and I love those like really strenuous roles. And whenever he got to actually like start fighting, those were like some of the more it was like really getting to express my acting chops, because I got to kind of differentiate the kinds of efforts I was making, and we got to kind of choose, like, okay, like, we like all of this stuff, now which ones are we gonna keep today? Anyway, I'm rambling a little bit. If you have a question, just throw it at me and I'll stop.
Yeah,
but,
go ahead.
You're good.
But yeah, I loved Twisted Kayun. Definitely one of my favorites, even if he was very short-lived. But I'm glad that it was something that I could make last in the Hell's Paradise franchise.
Yeah,
if they make a fighting game, you'll be like one of the most annoying characters to fight.
Definitely,
because like they wouldn't make you weak. You'd be one of those characters where we could stun lock you and hit you like a million times with like all the weapons.
That would be perfect. It's just like, why is this guy so hard to play? Now I see why.
He has armor.
He's unfair.
He'd get armor frames. He's 100% good armor frame.
Now that's a moneymaker idea. They should be already on it. Honestly, should be like an arena fighter. Yeah.
Sure, yeah. Maybe like a Shippuden,
a Tekken
Storm or whatever.
Tekken fight.
Yeah.
As long as I get to watch videos of William making all those voices, it'll be worth it.
We got to do a little bit of that this past weekend, because we were at Anime Frontier, just, you know, chilling basically. And we were at a panel. We were just
sitting there. Panel.
Oh yeah, that was not my fault, but I felt silly for falling for it again. there are late night panels, and somehow I'm always like, let me just maximize my time at the con and enjoy this. And I enjoy it, just I always wonder how I ended up in the situation. But
they run some wild panels late at night.
So we were sitting there enjoying it, this wild ass panel, and a couple rows up, there was a couple people who were cosplaying. And one of them looked familiar, and they had white hair, black, like, ninja garb. And I looked for a while. I was still like, am I tired or what? But that looks like Gabimaru the Hollow. And I asked Bradley, and he was like, yeah, that's definitely Gabimaru the Hollow. I'm like, look at him just sitting there ignoring me. Like, I wanted to spit out the line. I was just like, hey, like, oh, my God. And after there was like a break, I went over to like see, and sure enough, he was Gabimaru. I asked him, because I asked him, like, did he watch the sub or the dub? He said he watched both, and he had seen our episode. And once he realized like who we were, it made his day, and he had really made our day, because seeing an awesome cosplay like that was just exceptional. I was just really happy to like see him, and once I couldn't help myself, but I delivered the line right there, and he just his mind was just blowing off into multiple parts of the galaxy. It was cool.
Is that picture that you guys posted up on Facebook?
That's right. Oh yeah. That's the one. I thought his cosplay was really good.
Yeah. It's really good.
Yep.
Yeah. If you got any other questions, feel free to field them. Otherwise, William and I could just talk for hours.
Yeah. In fact, I probably need to plug in my laptop here to make sure it doesn't go the way of Twisted K, and it will die. I'll be right back.
Well, I guess kind of diving a little more into the show itself. What was your guys' thought of the people that were indigenous to that island turning into trees?
I really thought that was interesting, the sort of arborification. I really like that idea. It's a real like neat body horror idea. I thought that was really neat. They go into that more later in the manga. I won't go into that. It's a really, it helps it again give it this like really otherworldly feel where you're like, you don't really understand the rules of like how this island works, and I think that's a really neat touching thing. And the guy treating May as his daughter is just really heartbreaking as well. I really like that. It's very, very sad. I think that's super cool. That's one of the most endearing parts of the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe that's Jim Ferranda?
I know, that's crazy.
Yeah. Dude Jim Ferranda voices the infamous Muscle, whoever, in My Hero. And that character's a bastard. And then he goes to this very touching, loving, basically like foster father. Like,
yeah,
it was amazing.
I mean, Jim's great. He's been in like everything. If you look at his credits, he's been in like every major show for like the past like 25 years. He's really good.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And a very wholesome dude, honestly.
Yeah, he's very, very nice.
Yeah.
Awesome to hear. I am curious, as far as you guys were talking about as you were acting out, did you guys get to watch and then act out the scenes, or did you just get a script and then you had to basically be like, all right, this is how I think this person would act, or the director would kind of lead you? Like, how does that process work?
William, do you want to do this one? I could also answer. Up to you.
Fair. I'll start off and feel free to jump in if you want to.
Sounds good.
So these days, especially when it's a simulcast, simuldub, we don't get the script. A lot of it is cold reading. In fact, I would say all of it is cold reading. We have the opportunity to watch the show in Japanese, but it's kind of like a double-edged sword depending on who you are. The script could be very different. It could be the same as the subtitles. The subtitles, which are also localized so that our North American audience can enjoy them. But in any case, we go to the session earlier on time, and we see the ADR script for the first time on one screen, and then we get to see the Japanese source material on another screen. And we take chunks of the scenes or scene and dub them over. We'll take a listen or a preview where we get to see the Japanese acting. We get to take in all the information we can. The director will also share information. There may be a moment to ask questions. There may not be. But in that time frame is when we are expected to digest all the info we can, understand our lines, and deliver them. And usually in one or two takes, hopefully. So we don't get to preview much at all. In our case, we were familiar with the manga because I was, weebing out on it and sharing it everywhere. I guess some folks could call it like a free fall, but a lot of talent really thrive in environments like that. There's a lot of various methods that we can use, such as, well, actually, I'll give it to you from here, Brad. Like, what kind of methods do you usually use when you are acting, such as with a Kisho?
So, something that you need to get used to with anime, and it's always been like this, where generally speaking, they don't send you the script ahead of time. They will tell you. Sometimes they won't even tell you what the show is, depending on how secret everything is. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes I haven't been told what character I'm playing until I show up in the door. So what you have to be able to do is something called cold reading, where you are able to immediately jump into a scene and go, okay, I'm this guy. This is his motivation. This is what he wants. This is how he's like, this is how he sounds. All right, let's go. And there's also improv, which is basically, all right, I need to be able to very quickly change how I think, like, all right, everything I just thought was wrong, the director's told me that this is completely incorrect. I have to be able to switch around to what they're doing. So it's like, okay, all right. So for Kisho, I didn't really know, because like when I was reading, you know, when you read, frankly speaking, when you're reading manga, if you're an actor, you're like, oh, I want to be that like main character. Kisho was a character that I sort of read past whenever I was pursuing it, because it's like, oh yeah, you know, it's like if you read Dragon Ball Z and you didn't know anything about it, and you're like trying to think like, man, what would Zarbon sound? How would I feel playing Zarbon? And it's like, you don't think about it, but that doesn't make Zarbon less important, just you don't think about it that much. So whenever I went in for Kisho, I was like, well, what does he sound like? And then I had to sort of, Mike coached me through it, because I think originally I did it much more in my natural voice, and then I had to put it a little bit more in my nose, and that's how it ended up in this very specific register, because it's very, you know, breathy. It's very, I'm better than you. And it, like, you have to be able to get there from sort of where you start. For like, another example of, like, a case where this has happened for me specifically, if you watch the soccer anime Blue Lock, my character is Jubei Aryu, the most fabulous, glamorous soccer player. Like, whenever I did that voice, I started like, well, I guess they came in here, so now we're going to have to defeat them. And I did it all in sort of this way, and he was just like, no, more flamboyant, more whispery, but more flamboyant. And I was like, so I ended up here. It's just very bitchy. It's the whole time. Just, I'm so, like, it's like Kisho, like, elevated to, like, this level of just, like, if Kisho was a fashion model that also, like, you know, did nothing but look at himself in the mirror for 4 hours every morning. So I really had to get to that point. And you have to be able to, like, do that to be able to be, like, to be good at this specific facet of the job. The ability to be flexible, the ability to sort of go to where the director wants you to be and to sort of match that energy of the Japanese is really vital. If you want a little inside baseball, by the way, this process is very different in other places. Here in Texas, it's the three beeps and then you record. So what happens is that, like, they'll play a little bit, they'll show you the Japanese, and then it's like, all right, now we're gonna go. And then you'll hear beep, 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 and then on the fourth beep, that's when you start talking. Because they're playing a little bit of the scene ahead of when you were talking. Even by director, this changes sometimes. Sean Gann, great director, we did a Legendary Heroes Dead together. Most people, it's like, you do, like, one line, maybe two. Sean, he's like, I'm gonna show you the entire scene. These, like, 10 lines. Yeah. I just want you to go. And it's like, all right, so, I don't know, and you're trying to match all the lip flaps and match all the scenes and match all the timing. So that also depends on director. If you're in LA right now, I heard they do this, like, karaoke method, where, like, they'll show you it, and then they have, like, the words, it's not a script, it's, like, on the bottom of the screen where, like, you're supposed to say it in the timing of the, like, karaoke bar words. It's very interesting. If you're in Houston, they do the chase method where there are no beeps. You just have to, like, they'll show it to you and go, all right, do that again. No beeps, just go, which is very, very intimidating. And if you do, I happen to know if you do Yu-Gi-Oh! Specifically, because I took a class with their director, they don't show you the Japanese at all because of the way that that's dubbed, where it's so heavily localized. They're like, we don't have to worry about what the Japanese are doing because we could just do whatever basically we want.
Oh,
so it all depends on where you're doing it too. It's all a very fascinating process as an actor to sort of approach all these different things different ways too.
That's New York with
New York.
Dang, they're doing their own thing up there.
I mean, they've always done that. I mean, that's how you get, like, you'll watch, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Clips where, like, a car will just be, oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger has a giant mammoth god. And it's like, they're like, we don't care. It's whatever.
That's hilarious.
There's a great clip. I'm just gonna quote Yu-Gi-Oh! Real quick. There's a great clip from, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! GX that my friend loves showing me, where they're in the middle of a duel and the main character's like, I can't believe you said that. You know what? It's time to duel. And the other character's like, what do you think we've been doing? Just so much of that. There's so much. If you go through those clips of Yu-Gi-Oh! They're having so much fun.
That's hilarious.
Just do that. It's like halfway to Ghost Stories, I feel sometimes.
That happy medium.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Does that kind of apply to all characters all around, no matter, like, if you're a side character or if you're the main character, or do they give people playing main characters a little more time, like, hey, we need to develop it better, so, because you're going to be across all these episodes?
In my experience with main characters, because I've only done it a couple times, I've only been a couple of main characters. So the three times I've done this, with Coach and Gunbuster, that was a specific process where I did audition, and then I had to re-audition for because I guess the producers thought I sounded too young or something like that. And they had me do like the, like when you listen to me actually play Coach in Gumbuster, it's this very intense, listen to me, Takeya, you need to go out there and you need to pilot this robot. They had me like re-audition because they were like, I don't know, his voice isn't deep enough. They had me like do it all the way down here like I'm Batman for some reason. And then we got in with the director, and the director's like, no, don't do that, actually. We just needed to prove to them that you could, because, you know, the client wanted that. But so that's one way that it can go, is just the director's like, look, you know, the client wants this specific thing. We can mm-hmm. try and show them that you can do that, and then we'll work for with it from there. And Gumbuster also had the benefit of being like really old. If you don't know what Gumbuster is, are you familiar with Gumbuster?
I'm not.
It's on Crunchyroll now. It's like 7 episodes.
It's 6 episodes.
If you know
what Neon Genesis Evangelion is, it's like the prototype for that, made by the same director, Hideaki Anno.
Okay.
It was made in like the 1980s. It's very old, so like I have the benefit of being able to sit there and like watch all of it, and like I was familiar with it before I went in. For a slightly stepped up example, Tempuru, which is like the harem anime that I'm in as the protagonist. If you listen to the Japanese for Tempuru, the main character is this like 21-year-old dude that like drops out of school to become a monk because he's terrified of being attracted to women, because his dad left him to go sleep with as many women as possible, is the premise of this show. So he's trying to live like a celibate life. If you listen to the Japanese guy's voice is like this deep. He's like talking sort of in this register down here. And I get in with the director Mike, and I'm like trying to sort of match that because I had checked it out. And he was like, no, we don't want it as deep as the Japanese. We're gonna try it a couple ways. So ultimately, Akimitsu sounds about right here. He's about in this range is where he sits, because we wanted to make sure he sounded a little older than like a teenager, but like he doesn't sound like, you know, he's like in his like late 20s, early 30s. And that took a little bit of rigor. It's like, okay, let's center it. Let's do these lines again. So like the first few lines, it took me a couple tries. Gwell Jedrick in Mobile Suit Gundam, The Witch from Mercury, we did like 20 takes of the one line.
What?
The line that was you see that, like, this is how Gwell Jedrick wins his duels. Like, that line, I was like 20 tries of like, all right, can you, more confident on this part, can you not so much rasp, not so much gruffness? And like, Gwell ends up ultimately sitting a little bit higher than Akimitsu just because he's so like uptight all the time. Mm-hmm. And he's always, you know, it's just a big ball of tension the entire time. And he also has to sound young because he's technically like 16 or 17. So it's like in this very specific ballpark. So we really, Jason Lord, who directed that, really sat with me and really went, okay, we gotta fix this right now. And we have to make sure that this sounds correct for the rest of the show. So I think that by and large, it depends. It varies from director. It varies from project to project. But generally speaking, yes, I have had much more focus on making sure the voice and the character work in the early lines whenever it's a main character.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I love that you brought up Gundam, because, I mean, that was one of my favorites of the when that season came out.
Nice.
Nice. Nice.
Hell yeah. I'm still hoping we'll get like a movie or something.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. I'm actually in the process of, I'm going to be 3D printing out and doing some EVA foam, and I'm going to build a aerial cosplay.
Nice. Oh,
very cool. Nice. That'd be pretty badass.
Oh, yeah.
So I saw someone made a Daryl Bald where like the arms came off and then like little swords came out of the arms, like the stumps, like the anime. It was so cool.
That's awesome.
I love when people do any kind of Gundam cosplay. It's awesome. There was like a 10-foot tall Gundam that, was walking around Anime Frontier. If you look up pictures of that, it's nuts.
Awesome.
I got a video of that, but I don't think I ever posted it. He was ridiculous.
He was sick. Ridiculous. I found out he got sponsored by like the Bandai to make that costume and like walk around. So that was
That's awesome.
Good.
Well, Matt, do you want to get us back on subject?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about Hell's Paradise. I forgot about that.
I got lots.
See, we're having fun. Okay.
I really want to talk about the manga. I know me specifically, what really brought me into the manga, besides the podcast and just kind of that's our thing, was I loved the artwork when it came to the manga, because it had really hard lines and it was just very bold. And sometimes you can get some manga where it's like they'll pick and choose, but it seemed like this one, it was like everything's going to be hard. Everything's going to be very direct when it comes to the artwork. Did you guys was there anything specific that kind of drug you in, especially you, William, since you absolutely love this, and you were
the origin point.
Yeah.
Honestly, my favorite part of the manga outside of the art style itself was the pacing of it. The creator was very punctual and meticulous with how everything was going to play as you turned the page, as you went from panel to panel. You would be going into one thing and suddenly you turn the page and it looks like, okay, he just lost his head. What do you mean? How is this happening? And then suddenly you're like, oh, okay, this is like what he's envisioning could happen here. Or he'll try to, a character such as Gabimaru or Mei will be trying to establish like, okay, how are you feeling? Is everything okay? And things will appear to be on the surface like, all right. Then you turn the page and boom, again, missing your head. Like, I really loved how he kept doing that no matter what. So it kind of just keep you like on the edge of your seat every time you turn the page, wondering, okay, what am I going to get into next? How can I even imagine what's going to happen next? And then, let's see, there was something. The gore itself. I thought that was done, but the way that he created the gore in that show was just not only explicit, but down to the detail. Like, you would see like hanging flaps of skin that were just like very, very jagged. It wouldn't just be like, okay, there it is. It would be like, okay, here are all the little pieces of it. Here's all the texture from this portion where it was like burned or something. I really enjoyed everything that he put into that artwork. I also really love how in the story, you get the sense that there is something to lose, that no one's really safe. There aren't necessarily a bunch of red shirts, if I may, at the beginning or anywhere in the story. It's more like, hey, if you're here, there's a good chance you could lose your head. Characters that you think are going to have a huge part, as we know, end up getting squished like flies, even eaten. Like, it's beyond me. And the biggest characters, as we saw with, I think Ray Heard voiced the big baby man. What was he? Big man, baby boy. Something.
Okuro, something
like that. He was pretty damn tragic too. He was a case of what was it? Of upbringing. Yes, that's him. He just didn't necessarily understand that he was doing something wrong. He just knew that he was trying to enjoy his life, and it's not like he was this evil character or anything like that. And being able, and Sagiri, like suddenly being able to kind of just tap into some secrets of the island was also a really one of my favorite panels in the entire manga. Just seeing her facing off against Rokurota. Is that it?
Yes.
Yeah. I really like that.
I really appreciate in that same section when he kills, I think his name is Aizen or Aizen.
Aizen.
The head of the Yamada Osamu. Because like they build that up. Like if you watch, like you're watching something where you're like, yeah, there's this military order. And, like the leader being killed is like usually something you save for much, much later. It does create tension. You're like, man, I don't know who they're going to kill or who's going to live through this. Mm-hmm. I without spoiling it, for what actually does end, I really did think like, man, maybe they're just going to kill everybody. Like maybe this whole manga is just going to end. We're like, I was like pretty sure like when at the point that the first season ends, I was like, I think maybe like Mei will get off this island, like everybody else is gonna die. Like that's how this is gonna go. And I'm like, that's metal as hell. I love that. I love the tension that you feel with like the sense of finality that it has. And it's the first season covers a portion of the manga that I think is really, really good about keeping you guessing about who's gonna live, who's gonna matter, who's gonna die. I love Senta dying. Also feels like, well, Senta's been around for so long, it's like, oh, we're still killing characters, like that's great. And his death is really emotional, and like they give a lot of weight to it, and I love that. I do feel sad that Kaon is like one of the only villains that like the heroes interact with, where we don't get like a flashback to like his backstory. I think he's just dead.
We didn't get much of a flashback. I mean, he established that he was a meanie, that he wasn't anybody that like had, like we didn't get the tragic backstory of him, or like, oh, my childhood was this. It was just like, well, I've been killing folks for a long time, and I think you're looking like the next one. Like, that's that was basically.
Yeah, I do like William. Are you familiar with Benkei? I forget if we talked about this.
Benkei.
He's like a folk hero in Japan. He's this famous guy. I think he's who Keiun is based off of. It's this folk hero who famously, like, if you see a statue of a guy that's been stabbed like 1,000 times standing there dead, like, that's Benkei, because he's this guy who famously had like a 100 weapons. He was like a warrior monk, which is the thing that Keiun is also supposed to be. And he like famously defended this bridge where he died standing up because he got stabbed so many times because he killed so many people defending this area. Really famous story, so I really like that. I think that was like the template for that I thought was really cool.
As you were saying that, it sounded very familiar. It also reminded me of that Naruto character, the mist ninja guy. But yes, that does sound really familiar, and I wonder if it's I don't feel like they put that in the notes. I'll have to go back and look again. But the creator definitely left like notes in the back of each manga volume to kind of like give more pretext, subtext, whatever, more substance about what had happened throughout the story that was covered. So you might get a little bit of history of Taoism or like what something is based off of. But I'll have to go back and see if he has any notes about Twisted Keiun.
Yes, well. I do love his notes too. Like, you could tell this guy was really rigorous. Like, if you read the manga, there's a bunch of author's notes at the back about like all the stuff that he references to be like, and here's all this stuff about like Chinese culture, Japanese mythology. It's like, it's really fascinating to learn. And he's like, yeah, I kind of twisted this around to like make this fit. He's very like honest, like, yeah, it's not really like this in mythology, but I thought it'd be cool if it was like this. So I was like, so it's really good. I really love that the author really did his research. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And speaking of like the amount of tension that's happening as the story progresses, once the Tensen show up, it's a massive gap. Like, because you're thinking, okay, what's his name? Aizen? No.
Yes.
Maybe it is. Him getting squished was like, okay, the leader just got wrecked.
Yes.
And we've got some bigger issues over here with like monsters. Like, what can we actually do? We still don't really know what's going on this place, and there could be something much bigger. And sure enough, Tensen show up, and they basically come across as gods. And it's just like, how can mortals even stand up to these particular beings? So I loved how they had this massive gap that just left you going like, you better not find them, and you better not let them find you. And sure enough, that leads us to the epic moment with Tenza and Shion, where they have to face off against one of these alleged gods, and you know they are not about to back down for any reason. There's no defeat, no surrender, no retreat, but their option is basically like 100% fatal. Like, no matter what.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. Again, the shonen really work to sort of have like mini bosses basically before you fight a main boss. Like, you could see this with in like more form in something like Fullmetal Alchemist, it's the homunculi, which I think worked really well as a parallel, because the homunculi, you're also generally speaking, if someone runs into the homunculi in Fullmetal Alchemist, they're about to die. And then similarly, in Demon Slayer, if you have the like upper rank demons, like that, they occupy a very similar position of like, you know, if you run into them, they're probably going to kill you. They're these tremendously powerful demons that are much stronger than all the other ones. And the Tenzen, within the genre, I think really represent, because they're also perfectly alien in the way the Hell's Paradise is, where they'll randomly switch, they'll completely change like sex, like right in front of you. They have completely different morals. Their motivations, especially at first, seem so alien, and you're just like, this is so unnerving. I think it's really cool that way. Again, it's a very cool alien villain and a really cool twist on that shonen formula that I think is really cool.
I found it interesting talking about the Tensen, and like when they had that meeting, they're all sitting around drinking tea, talking about all the different things. Well, I like this form better. I like that form better. Like, it really brought into perspective their side of the island versus the rest.
And it does reinforce the idea of feeling like they live in like a Olympus style, like, you know, the gods are meeting here. It's really neat. I think that, yeah, in terms of atmosphere, all the way Hell's Paradise nails it.
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm.
As far as so this is something from the manga, their training as far as the Tenzin is concerned, I thought it was really, it was interesting because I wasn't expecting it, because they, you get that panel where it's the pool and then you get the bed in the background and they're like, this is how we do our training. And I'm just like, oh, okay. That's not really what I was expecting, but it just goes into how mature the whole series is, where it's like,
yes,
yeah, we're gonna do stuff underwater and then we're gonna go have sex on the bed and that's how we get stronger. And I'm just like, I mean, the first part kind of makes sense. You know, training underwater sounds really difficult. So
this is something that this is like not an unfamiliar concept. I haven't encountered too much of it in like mythology, but like specifically when it comes to like anime and stuff from Japan, like if you're familiar with the Fate series, that's big in the Fate series. I mean, like Fate used to be like an eroge, so that helps, but like how bad can I say something on this podcast? Because like
we swear you full go.
Oh man, yeah, I've been holding all that shit back for a while now.
No. The thing is, if you look up like on the Fate Wikipedia page or like the Fate like wiki page, like you can see like, yeah, you know, you can transfer mana from people from other people by your blood or your semen, and it's like that's like that's a big thing in the visual novel, is a lot of mana transfer, and it's really important. Their characters are like succubi, and that's like, it infects all of the Tsukihime Fate universe in a way that I think oftentimes is juvenile. I do think ultimately Hell's Paradise handles it a little bit better than that. Yeah. But I do find it really interesting and fun that it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, you're exchanging other fluids. Why not? Why not magic? Why not? Right.
Uh-huh.
I think Guntetsu Sai was kind of in the same vein as you, because I know this is covered in the anime already, when they encounter those not the Tenzin, but they're like the mini bosses. They're the guys who are like, we're not completely mindless, but we're not necessarily up there in the upper echelons.
Yes.
And they're explaining, I think, Bochujutsu. Is that what it's called?
Bochujutsu or something like that. Yeah. I
think, yeah.
They're going to try to do Mei, and it's like,
yeah. Guntetsu Sai is like, you disgusting son of a bitch, like you're gonna do that to that kid. And then later on he just gets his mind blown. He's like, oh, you're not a kid anymore. Like, well, I just so happen to be a man, blah blah blah.
Speaking of Guntetsu Sai, on the note of Bochujutsu, I just, every panel that he is on scene with Yuzuriha in the manga is absolute gold. Like, if you see any expression, he's like biting his lip, he's like sweating, he's having a full body reaction to being around this woman. I love it. It's so funny.
There's definitely one line I'm looking forward to hearing from him. I'm not going to spoil it by any means, but he just goes full 110% into it. And
that's great.
Yeah.
Definitely looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's going to be at least, I mean, there's definitely going to be one more season. No matter what,
we're going to cram it all together to make it one more, so I think it might be two more.
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, it's like 126 chapters, something along those lines. Mm. And the first season was like 41. Mm. So if they stay on pacing, that would be two more seasons.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully.
No idea how the series goes. I don't know what they could be leaving out or skipping or elongating to make it two more seasons.
You know what they didn't include so far were the what do they call them, epilogues, like the mini scene at the end,
mini in between chapter things.
Yep.
Yeah. I know, like at the beginning they had like the whole, you know, fashion thing going on, and that was pretty cool. That was cute. And then later on it seems like there's like these little mini episodes that are happening that give context or even pretext in some cases, but they're usually comedic. I'm not trying to like put a plug in or anything. Twisted Kame is not in any of that shit, but I am interested to see if they do include those later on, because there will be the no matter what, there is going to be some other interesting characters in the story.
Maybe we'll do like DVD extras with those bits, because I mean Kisho's in there occasionally, because it's like a lot of them are Sagiri going and talking to the other Yamada Asaemons.
Yeah.
Well, you got your brother also does that.
Exactly, Chobei's brother. Names proper nouns are always the hardest part. But yeah,
they're really neat. Yeah,
there should be at least two more seasons, no matter what.
Yeah. I would encourage anyone who likes the anime to go check out the manga, both because it's good and also to get those little segments, because I do think they are very neat. Right. Anything else? I know we are a little over our time.
And I'm already doing that thing.
It's all good. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, and it's just very interesting seeing your guys' perspective and hearing what you guys got to say and hearing kind of the behind the scenes stuff that occurred. I mean, it's good.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we love what we do. We're happy to talk about it.
If you're listening, then definitely check out Marissa Duran and Alejandro Saab, both in Hell's Paradise and in Horimiya. They get to play co-stars in both of those shows, which I thought was pretty fascinating too.
Yes, very much so.
Amazing. We are definitely a proponent for you guys. We're definitely behind, especially all the wonderful people that we get to interact with. I mean, it's amazing to be able to sit here and talk with you guys and get these insights. And then on top of it, being able to hear about all the other people that you guys work with on a day-to-day basis and kind of get to know them through your experiences, and maybe hopefully one day we can get them on the show and we can do this with them too.
That'd be pretty awesome, man. That'd be awesome. Thank you for saying that. That's really sweet.
Thank you.
No problem. Well, I mean, with that, do you have anything else to add on, Matt, or is there anything else you wanted to cover?
No. I again want to say thank you for allowing us to do this. It's been so much fun, and it's been very eye-opening. And as I said earlier, I really loved just seeing from your perspective just what really entices you guys into doing this. Mm-hmm. Because again, you guys are like, oh, I love the intricacies. I love these details that as a viewer, I'm just like, yeah, visual things. I love visual things. And you guys are like, well, these really deep moments are what I really love. And it's like, I really like that because it just kind of helps give me another perspective. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for allowing us to do this.
Oh, I love hearing it. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to share. And I feel like that's really like what anime has been about, just being able to find somebody, even more so today because it's so mainstream, and chat with them about the things that you enjoyed. It can help just open your mind about what the creator or creators were trying to convey. Give more perspective on what characters might have been going through and discover something new. I think anytime I talk about like anime that I really enjoy with folks or manga that I really enjoy with folks, I end up discovering something brand new about that particular thing. And that's just the remarkable aspect of fantasy.
Yes, and I love what I do. If I wasn't here talking about it, I'd go bother my fiance about it. I'd be, you know, yelling at people in the street. Have you heard about Hell's Paradise? Give me the chance. I'm just gonna go up to people and do it. No, I love this job. I do think that, you know, oftentimes we get to work on shows that we wouldn't necessarily even watch if we weren't in them, and it's always a treat whenever it's like, yeah, this is something I'm really excited to hear about. And then it's like, wow, I get to be in it too, and it's magical. It's a really magical moment to be in there. And then I feel very, very lucky, very blessed with by the graces of the universe that I am allowed to do this. And I hope to continue doing this, and I'm super grateful that people like you seem to enjoy our work. So thank you so much for watching.
Oh yes, for sure. Just to throw that out there, here at the Anime Show and the Anime Lounge podcast, we're always looking out for new news, putting that out there, looking to put these interviews and get you guys to see the community that's around anime and the behind the scenes stuff and everything. I mean, it's interesting, and we're excited to share it with everybody. And with that, I hope everyone likes and follows the Anime Show, listens to the Anime Lounge podcast, where you can listen to podcasts, and listen to these two amazing guys when they're out on their shows.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess, well, Till next time.
Till next time.
See you in hell's paradise.
See you in hell's paradise.
I'm going to go up to people on the street. Hey, don't you dare ignore me. Have you heard about Twisted Cane? Look at this big thing. Oh, you're going to love it.
Start chucking manga at him. Start carrying volume. Attached to like sticks. Just chuck him like a spear.
You'll be the first one to enjoy this.